You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Tennant, and Dr. Tennant really has an amazing story to tell. I already heard about him from one of our regular guests, Deborah Tavares, who was having some physical problems. She went to see Dr. Tennant, and his background is an ophthalmologist, but I'm going to let him tell you his background, and then, of course, what he is doing today, because he's changed his approach to medicine. Good evening, Dr. Tennant. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you were an ophthalmologist for many years?
Yes, that's right. I practiced regular ophthalmology for about 30 years or so.
All right, fine. Well, you're about to sound like you're sort of in my age group a little bit. But anyway, why don't you give the background of what happened and then, of course, what you're doing today and what you've discovered.
Okay, thank you. Well, I did the majority of the research for the laser that's used in LASIK surgery, and I had a lot of fun doing that. However, what we didn't know at the time was that the laser wouldn't kill viruses. And so as I would be treating people with the laser, it would remove cells and release viruses, and they came up and went through my mask and into my nose and into my brain. So I developed encephalitis and a bleeding disorder. And what basically happened to me was that I got to where I could see a patient and know what was wrong with them, but I couldn't remember how to write a prescription. And I also developed spastic movements, which doesn't work really well if you're operating inside somebody's eyeball. So for all of those reasons, I had to quit work at the end of November in 1995. So I, of course, traveled around to the best docs I could find, and they basically said, well, you have three viruses in your brain. We don't know what to do about it, so don't call us. We'll call you. So I spent about 7 years sleeping about 16 hours a day, and I had two or three hours a day in which I could think clearly enough to understand a newspaper, and then like a light switch, it would go off, and I couldn't understand it anymore. So during that two or three hours that I was lucid, I realized I'd have to figure out how to get myself well. And so I got the idea that if I could figure out how to make one cell work, I can make them all work. And so I began to read cellular biology books, which I hadn't done for about 30 years. And as I'm prone to do, I went out and bought about half a dozen cellular biology books and began to read them. One of the things that sort of resonated with me as I read through them is that there would be anywhere from a sentence to a page about the fact that cells have to run at a very narrow pH of 7.35 to 7.45. Well, I didn't really remember a whole lot about pH, except it had something to do with acid-base balance. So I began to investigate that a bit more and discovered that pH is actually the measurement of voltage in a solution.
It has to do, of course, with the acidity or alkalinity of cells, and cells have to have the proper pH or they're just not going to function. Well, my guess is Dr. Tennant, we're going to be back here in just a moment to talk more about this, because this, of course, was his introduction to beginning to look to alternative means of therapy. And basically, there are lots of alternative therapies out there that are not widely accepted in medicine because they don't go along with our preconceived notions. And yet some of them are very, very effective, and you at least should hear about them.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Tennant had basically started reading a lot of books on just elementary biology and found out that the cells had to have a certain pH to function, and of course you could influence that with voltages, and he then began to research the background of the voltage that a cell requires. We are electric beings. People don't understand that, but certainly we run on electricity. Certainly our nerve impulses go on electricity. Our brain functions with electricity. There are voltages all over the body, and certainly he was talking then about some of the elementary work that had been done on this many years ago by a Japanese physician going into acupuncture lines, and acupuncture lines and acupuncture sites are centers where these electric currents tend to converge or diverge. But you pick up the story there, please.
Well, when I was able to measure the voltage into my brain and discovered it was running at 2 to 4 millivolts instead of 25 millivolts, then it became obvious to me why it didn't work. And so, obviously, the next question was, how do I change the voltage in the brain? And I discovered that many years ago, Certainly as long ago as the late 1800s, 1892, there were devices that were designed with a frequency pattern that would transfer electrons to cell membranes. And so I began to acquire that technology and began to put voltage back into my system. And over a period of a few weeks, my brain started working again. And so that really is how I began my journey in figuring out how to get people well.
Well, is this something similar to the work that Dr. Reif had done many, many years ago that was certainly a ban by the government?
No, actually, it's quite different.
All right.
Royal Reif believed somewhat incorrectly that all disease is caused by microorganisms. And he was correct in noting that each microorganism runs at a different frequency. And so he began to irradiate them with various frequencies until he found the one that would destroy them. And then he called that the mortal oscillatory rate. But there are a whole lot of problems with Reif technology, not the least of which is that as you send frequencies through the body, they change as they go through each different type of tissue. So, for example, if you were to determine that a certain microorganism was killed at, say, 727 hertz, and you send that in, and let's say that organism was in your lungs, well, by the time the frequencies got all the way through the skin and the muscle and down to the lungs, it would be a different frequency. And so his theories were interesting, but somewhat incorrect.
All right, fine. Well, then, Chris, then how does your system work?
Well, the first thing I had to figure out was a bit more about how you use the how you have the ability to measure the voltage in each meridian. And it turns out that work by one of the professors at the medical school in Vermont was able to figure out that acupuncture meridians are simply the fascial planes of the body. And so, as you know, we have this fibrous-looking tissue that goes up the back and down the front in the midline, and then from that goes around all of the different muscles, and then goes down around each different organ, and from that there are little fibers that go down to each cluster of cells. And so that is the human body's wiring system. And the interesting thing about the fascia is that they are electronic semiconductors. A semiconductor is an electronic device that can rapidly move electrons from place to place. So, for example, you can stimulate the foot, and in basically a nanosecond, that information is all the way up to the top of your head. And that's because the acupuncture system carries information and moves electrons so amazingly rapidly, certainly much, much faster than nerves. So what you find then is that if you tap into one of the acupuncture points that are wires that goes directly to a given organ, you can measure and see what the voltage is in each organ. Once you can measure it, then you can also use that same wire to restore voltage to the cell membrane if you use a specific type of a pattern of frequency or pattern of frequency output that will transfer electrons. And there are many things that don't do that well. For example, standard sine wave, like you often find in TENS machines and other similar devices, don't do a very good job of transferring their electrons. In addition, you have to realize that every organ in the body runs at a different frequency. And so to transfer electrons to different organs, you have to understand the electronics of how that works. And we've basically put all of those things into a device that we call the biomodulator, where we can put it in the voltmeter mode and measure the voltage of each organ, and then put it into the therapy modes.
Well, then, do you measure the volt at the acupuncture site or over the organ?
Well, if you just go on top of the organ, you're not going to be measuring the organ because you're really just measuring the skin and muscle that's over it, unless you are on the appropriate wire. Now, one of the things I was able to figure out is that each region of the body actually has a central terminal, and there's one terminal in the front and one in the back, and each of those provide all of the voltage for all of the organs that are in that particular region of the body. So, for example, there's a set of what I call bioterminals for the head, one set for the neck, one set for the chest, one for the abdomen, one for the pelvis, and then the one that's in the perineum and on the top of the head that actually controls all the rest of the systems. And so if you tap into those bioterminals, then you'll be measuring the organ for that region. Then we have separate wires that run from those bioterminals out either through the arms or the legs. All the organs above the diaphragm go through the arms, all of them below the diaphragm go through the legs, and you can tap into specific parts of either the arm or the leg and measure a specific organ that way as the wires go up and tap into the bioterminal.
Well, okay, fine. So basically then, how were you able to utilize this? Were you able to get your brain functioning again pretty well?
Well, over time, I began to, it took me some time to figure all this out and began to resolve the issue. But now I'm back working full time, and my wife tells me I'm working harder than when I was an ophthalmologist. But nevertheless, I'm back to work again.
Well, now, basically, then, how can you utilize this to help patients? Because I know you do see patients and you help them.
Well, I have changed my paradigm about how I think about chronic disease from the way I was trained. Traditional medicine in this country believes that if you have a chronic disease, you must find some chemical that will make the symptoms of those diseases go away, or if you can't do that, then you cut out the offending part and throw it away. And if that doesn't work, then you're sort of out of bullets. I don't believe that way anymore. It's my understanding that the body is constantly replacing itself. For example, you get new rods and cones in your retina every 2 to 3 days. The lining of your gut is replaced every 3 days. The skin you're sitting in this moment is only 6 weeks old. Your liver is 8 weeks old, etc. So our cells are constantly wearing out and having to be replaced. In addition, cells get damaged by infections, by trauma, by chemicals, etc. So it's my belief now that chronic disease occurs when we lose the ability to make new cells at work. Let me just say that once again. Chronic disease occurs when you lose the ability to make new cells at work.
And what you're basically saying is the body is manufacturing new cells all the time. And basically, our cells, certainly, they go through a phase and then they die, but the body replaces those cells. So these are new cells coming on board. Is that, in essence, what you're saying?
That's correct. And okay. If you lose that ability, then, of course, that organ begins to malfunction and now you get sick. So once you buy into that paradigm, if you do, then it begs the question, well, what does it take to make a new cell at work? And if you go down that road and can identify the things that are missing that keep you from making new cells, then you can figure out how to get people well. So one of the things that's interesting about making new cells, as I mentioned, is that it takes about minus 50 millivolts to make a new cell. So think about my thumb. As I sit here, I have a perfectly good thumb. Running at 25 millivolts, minus 25 millivolts, and everything's fine. Then I smash that thumb with a hammer and destroy a bunch of cells in it. Well, immediately, the voltage in my thumb goes to minus 50 millivolts because my body recognizes the injury and that I have to begin to make new cells. Well, one of the things that automatically happens when you go to minus 50 millivolts is that it causes the arterial capillaries to dilate so you can dump raw materials in the curb so the you have them available to make the new cells. Well, when those arteriocapillaries dilate, then, of course, the thumb is swollen. It gets warm, it gets red, and it has a pulsing pain. Does the music mean I need to stop?
No, I will tell you when to, but you might as well right now. I will be back here in just a moment with Dr. Tennant.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try Propax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Thought we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Tennant is saying that certainly when an organ has low voltage, the question is, why does it have low voltage? It should be in a minus 25, and well, hypothyroidism will do this, chronic dental infection will do this, and certainly a scar across the acupuncture meridian actually tends to distort the transmission along the acupuncture lines. And of course, all of this then predisposes to low voltage so that the organs cannot actually rectify and get their voltage back up to normal. So if they are damaged, then they can begin to produce new cells. Now, for those of you out there in the audience who certainly wonder what this has to do with acupuncture, I will tell you, I don't understand acupuncture, but I did it for some years. I was get to be a very, very accomplished acupuncturist. I was able to help a lot of people with this. And eventually I had to decide if I wanted to be an acupuncturist and orthopedist. I enjoyed orthopedics thoroughly, and so I gave up acupuncture. But it does work. It really does work. And there are these meridians. There are the acupuncture points. And why? Perhaps Dr. Tennant understands this far better than I do. But they seem to tie into various organs and certainly to pain syndrome. So Dr. Tennant is just saying that certainly when the voltage on an organ or a structure gets very low, then pain begins to develop. And why don't you pick the story up from there, Dr. Tennant?
Well, another bad thing that happens as voltage begins to drop is that oxygen levels begin to drop. So what is important to understand is that the amount of oxygen that will dissolve in water is dictated by the voltage of the water. So if you take a glass of water and put a tube in and start bubbling oxygen into it, the amount of oxygen that will dissolve is dictated by the voltage. So if you raise the voltage, more oxygen goes into solution, but if you drop the voltage, oxygen comes out of solution. So cells are 70% water, and as voltage begins to drop in them, then the oxygen actually comes out of the cell and disappears. Well, there's several bad things that happen when oxygen levels drop. One of them has to do with metabolism. Inside our cells, we have a rechargeable battery system called ADP-ATP. When the battery's charged up, it's called ATP. When it's discharged, it's called ADP. And that battery system provides the energy necessary for the enzymes in cells to work.
Well, for our listeners out there, adenosine triphosphate, adenosine biphosphate, it simply it has to do with the phosphate, and it's the phosphate that it gives you the charge to the cell. Go ahead. Or to the little batteries in the cell. Go ahead.
So, because we have a rechargeable battery system in there, we need a battery charger, and that battery charger is known as the Krebs cycle. And the Krebs cycle in all of the body except the nervous system is designed to run on fat. So for every unit of fat you put into the Krebs cycle, if you have oxygen available, you get enough electrons to charge up 38 of those ATP batteries. But if oxygen is not available, for every unit of fat you put into the Krebs cycle, you can only charge up 2 batteries. So as oxygen drops, then our efficiency of metabolism goes basically from 38 miles to the gallon to 2 miles to the gallon, so to speak. And, of course, this is because oxygen levels dropped, and oxygen levels dropped because voltage dropped. Well, then, in addition to having pain and a very inefficient metabolism, there's the fact that each of us contain about a trillion bugs. And these bugs are asleep as long as there's oxygen available. But when oxygen drops, the bugs wake up, and the first thing the bugs want to do is have lunch, and they want to have you for lunch. And so, since bugs don't have teeth to take a bite out of you, they put out digestive enzymes and begin to dissolve cells so they can get the nutrients out. So if you think about a strep bacteria that's having a picnic on your tonsil, they're having a good old time dissolving your tonsillar cells and getting the nutrients out. But of course, you feel terrible because those digestive enzymes get in your blood and go all over the place. And so they cause you to have a fever. They cause you to have vomiting and diarrhea, and a bad headache, and ache all over, and can even go down and scar your heart valves and your knees. So basically, bugs show up and infections occur when oxygen levels are depleted. And again, oxygen levels controlled by voltage. So whenever voltage drops, for whatever reason, you can be assured that all of these things I've mentioned are going on simultaneously. So, of course, as you have these infections, they are damaging cells, which have to be replaced, but often can't be replaced because you wouldn't have gotten the infection in the first place if you didn't have low voltage in the first place.
Well, now, certainly metal intoxication play any part in these certainly recurrent infections or chronic infections you're talking about? I mean, excesses of aluminum or lead or something of that sort?
Sure, because all of those heavy metals are electron stealers.
Well, that thought will be right back here.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Longevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Longevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Tennant, and we're just starting to talk about the part that metals play. And most people don't understand that today we're really being poisoned with aluminum and with lead and with mercury and cadmium and fluoride, and all of these metals or chemicals are getting into us, and they do alter our immune response and the cell function. But before we get back into that, Dr. Tennant, would you like to tell our listeners how they could get to your website, get information about you, if they wanted to get more information?
Sure, thank you. My website is www.tennantinstitute.com. And Tennant is spelled T-E-N-N-A-N-T. Notice there's two N's in the middle. T-E-N-N-A-N-T, tennantinstitute.com.
Okay, fine. Well, we were beginning to talk just a little bit about the metals, and certainly, do you investigate the metals, or do you chelate the metals at all along with your treatments?
Well, the way the universe deals with heavy metals is with a substance called fulvic, and people confuse that with folic, which isn't correct. Fulvic is F-U-L-V-I-C, fulvic. So, fulvic also has a major influence on the voltage at cell membrane level, and controls what gets into and out of the cell membrane, or actually into and out of the cell. So I put 100% of my patients onto a product that we put together called Raw Materials that has all the known vitamins, all the known minerals, all the known amino acids, plus it has humic and fulvic, so that it has not only the ability to provide most of the nutrients that you need, but it controls heavy metals, and it also eliminates radiation problems. And so that's the way I deal with that. I used to do chelation therapy, but I quit because it's much more cost-effective to patients to just use the fulvic.
Just go ahead and take it orally then.
Yep.
Okay, fine. Well, then basically let's get back then to how are we going to change the basically the voltage in organs and the tissues. Go ahead.
So as the first thing that you should look at in each person is what's going on with thyroid, because if you don't get that right, then nothing else really works. There's a big problem with the diagnosis and treatment of hypothyroidism in this country. First of all, doctors are generally trained to use the TSH test, or thyroid stimulating hormone test, to determine if a person has a functioning thyroid or not. But that test has lots of problems. First of all, the test was developed in the late 1960s and put in place in 1971. And they looked at only 29 patients and got the original normals from just 29 people, which is not statistically significant. But they said that normal was 1 to 10. Well, over time, they figured out that that wasn't working, and so they kept changing it. And now almost all the labs are reporting normal as 0.4 to 4.6. Well, in 2003, the American Academy of Family Endocrinology said the number should be 0.3 to 3.0. And that same year, the Society for Clinical Chemistry said it should be 0.3 to 2.0. And so our labs are about 10 years late in updating their normals.
Now, basically, then, you're measuring TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone?
Yeah, that's...
You're not measuring the thyroid, but the TSH level. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, now, that's what the majority of doctors look at.
Right, because for our listeners out there, well, this, of course, TSH is put out by the pituitary, and if you're hypothyroid, then your pituitary will put out more TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone. If certainly if the thyroid is high, then it'll put out less TSH. So go right ahead.
So the problem is, let's say you go to your doc and you say, I have all of these symptoms, I'm tired, my brain doesn't work, my skin is dry, I have constipation, I get angry easily, my hands and feet are cold, I can't sleep at night, and the list goes on. So the doc does a test. Let's say your test comes back 4. Since it's less than 4.6, the doctor will tell you your thyroid's just fine, but 4 is actually twice normal. Well, there are more problems than that, in that TSH is actually controlled, the production of TSH in the pituitary is actually controlled by what's called thyroid-releasing hormone, which comes from the hypothalamus in the brain. And the hypothalamus is controlled by your levels of adrenaline, and about 90% of the American population are deficient in adrenaline. And so at the very beginning of the thyroid cascade, things go amiss. In addition, thyroid-stimulating hormone tells the thyroid gland to put out mostly the hormone T4, but T4 has to be converted to the active form of T3. Well, that conversion requires iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, cortisol, progesterone, and glutathione, and vitamin C. And if you're missing one of those things, then instead of converting to T3, you convert to a fake hormone called reverse T3. Well, 90% of the American population is deficient in iodine, and 80% are deficient in zinc. And most, if you don't have stomach acid, then you'll be deficient in glutathione. And if you don't take it in, you'll be deficient in vitamin C, since the human can't make it. So most people are running around with fairly high levels of the fake hormone called reverse T3. And the problem is that reverse T3 key that fits in the keyhole but won't turn the tumbler. It takes up the receptor site, so even if what T3 you have doesn't get there. So the reality is what thyroid tests we should be looking at are what's called pre-T3 and reverse T3. And you need to compare the ratio because you want at least 20 times as much free T3 as you have the fake hormone reverse T3. And another problem is that at the cellular level, you have a different enzyme that's involved in the one and in the pituitary. So the one in the pituitary is 1,000 times more effective than the one at the cell level. So you can have a perfectly normal TSH, and you can even have a normal level of free T4, but if you can't convert, then you can have 80% less thyroid than you really need at the cellular level. So an enormous number of the populations running around with that are hypothyroid, but their doctors are telling them that they're just fine. So that's a big problem.
So how do you counter this?
Well, you measure the appropriate tests, which are basically free T3 and RT3, calculate the ratio. And you want the free T3 between 3 and 4, and you want the ratio between them greater than 20. And you basically need to ignore the TSH because the TSH is influenced and becomes very unreliable if with almost any chronic illness, and it's certainly hugely unreliable in somebody that's pregnant or has been on chemotherapy.
So basically you're measuring T3 and T4 in the patients?
Free T3.
Free.
And reverse T3.
Okay, free and reverse.
Yep. So
I can never understand, Chris. I was an orthopedist and I didn't deal with this, but I can never understand why when we were going to be dealing with thyroid, we were measuring TSH rather than the T3 level. It just didn't make any sense, but go ahead.
Yep, that just shows you how things go in medicine, unfortunately. So, again, if you don't get the thyroid right, nothing else works because thyroid basically is the major controller of voltage at the cell membrane level, and if you don't have voltage, then nothing else works right because you can't make new cells. And if you don't have adequate voltage, even a normal cell can't function normally. So the first thing you have to look at is every patient that has chronic disease is what's going on at the thyroid at the cellular level. The other thing it's important to realize is that thyroid doesn't function normally without its buddy cortisol and adrenaline, because adrenaline controls the hypothalamus, which produces thyroid-releasing hormones, and cortisol is also necessary to convert T4 to the active form of T3. So with our adrenal glands, we actually have, there are two glands in one. The external gland part of the gland makes the hormone cortisol and also the blood pressure-controlling hormone called aldosterone. But the inner part of the gland makes the hormone adrenaline. And so most people, when they say, well, my adrenals are shot, are really just thinking about cortisol, but they are really missing out on all of the mischief that's caused by a decreased adrenaline. So let me just enumerate for you for a moment the things that go wrong when you don't have enough adrenaline. Of course, I've already mentioned that your thyroid hormone doesn't work correctly if you don't have it, but people who are deficient in adrenaline start having trouble dealing with stress, then they begin to have trouble with their memory, and then they can't multitask. So, for example, you're reading a book and somebody says, hey, do you want mustard or mayonnaise? Well, first of all, you're annoyed because somebody interrupted you. And you can't make that decision as long as your mind is attached to the book because you don't have the mental ability to multitask. You separate from the book, you make a decision of which one you want, and then you go back to your book to pick up again, but you can't remember where you were, and now you're really annoyed. And then it gets to where you can't stand any stimulus, so you don't like loud noises, you don't like rowdy crowds, you can't be around people who are arguing. And then eventually it gets to where you don't even like to be touched, and all you want to do is sit in the corner and have people leave you the heck alone. And in addition, without adrenaline, your sexual equipment doesn't work. And so, as you can see, many of your listeners will be somewhere on this slippery slope of adrenaline insufficiency. And it's really quite destructive to people's life, because if you don't want to interact with people, you can't be a good spouse, you can't be a good parent, you can't be good friend, you can't be a good worker, because everybody wants to interact with you, and you just get annoyed and grumpy when they try to do so. So lack of adrenaline is responsible for many family breakups, divorces, etc. Well, to make adrenaline only requires three things. It requires the amino acid tyrosine, plus vitamin C, plus vitamin B6. So if you start taking those, usually in about 6 weeks, you start having more fun. And, of course, it makes your thyroid work better. Well, we were going down this road of what causes low voltage, and we've talked about thyroid. The next thing that you need to look at is dental infections. As I mentioned, each tooth is wired into an acupuncture meridian, and when you have an infection in that tooth of decay, then the toxins from that infection go down the acupuncture wire and destroy or lower the voltage in that circuit. Well, there's a fairly easy way to identify dental infections even when dental x-rays miss them, and that is to simply go down to Radio Shack or Lowe's or someplace and buy a voltmeter that measures in millivolts. You put the voltmeter into the direct current mode, and you put one electrode against the inside of your cheek and then touch the other one onto any metal that you see. And if you see any reading that's over 100 millivolts, there's decay under that filling or under that crown. Now, this test doesn't work if you don't, if the tooth has, for example, one of the white fillings, or if it's a root canal tooth, because it can only measure metal. But you'll find over and over again infections in teeth this way that correspond to your measurement of low voltage in an acupuncture meridian. I did an interesting little study a few years ago. I have a friend who's an oncologist in Arizona, and I went out and spent 2 different weeks in his office looking at his cancer patients. And what we found was that 70% of the cancer patients had a root canal in the same acupuncture meridian as their primary cancer, and 30% had an infected crown in that same acupuncture meridian. And the mean time from the dental correction to the malignancy was 7 years. Since I did that study, I've only seen 4 patients with malignancy where I couldn't find a dental infection in the same acupuncture meridian. So it's not the only thing that contributes to it, but it certainly appears to be a major one. Well, what you obviously have to do is do whatever it takes from a dental standpoint to get the decay out of the mouth. And, of course, one of the huge problems is root canals. The way you do a root canal is you drill a little hole in the top of the tooth and you put an auger down inside and you rip out the artery and rip out the nerve and kill the tooth. Well, the dentists are the only physicians who believe you can get away with leaving dead tissue in the body. No other physician believes that. And, of course, even though you've ripped out the artery and the nerve, the root tips are still attached to the vascular system, and so there's still a source for infection to come up through all of the canals that are in that tooth. And there are many of them. A molar, for example, has over 3 miles of little tubules, so it's actually impossible to ever get all of those sterilized. And so, again, it's rare to find a person with malignancy that doesn't have a root canal in that same circuit. Well, one of the problems with root canals is that since they're all infected, the infection over time spreads out into the bone around it, and then you've got an even bigger problem. And as Doc here will tell you, once you get infection in the bone, that's really a hard thing to get rid of. So it's my opinion that root canal surgery should never be done, and if it is done, the tooth has to be pulled because it's dead and will eventually cause you grief. Well, the next thing that you look at after thyroid and dental infections is scars. So most of the acupuncture wires begin someplace in the feet, go all the way up to the top of the head. And as I mentioned, these acupuncture wires are electronic. ironically semiconductors, and when you put a scar across it, it creates a short or a ground. So one of the things you can do is you can take your thumb and touch it to your to the end of your ring finger, and then have somebody try to pull that circle apart, and you'll be quite strong and you can resist that. Then take the index and middle finger of your other hand and touch a scar and have them pull on the ring on your other hand again, and if you are now quite weak and that opens up, then it shows you that that scar is shorting out the acupuncture meridian. And so what happens when you touch that short is it makes your whole body ground out and go weak. So what you will commonly find is that you have scars, maybe you have a scar in your leg that's actually causing problems up in as far up as your brain. So, for example, the frontal lobes of your brain get their voltage from what's called the spleen acupuncture meridian, which starts at your big toe. The middle part of your brain gets its voltage from the gallbladder circuit, and the back part of your brain gets its voltage from the bladder circuit.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment.
Your body is composed of literally trillions of cells. Cells are the building blocks of energy and performance for your health and for the life you want to live. Nutritional Therapeutics, a trusted manufacturer of vitamin supplements, understands that when cells aren't operating at optimum levels, one of the immediate signs is an increase in fatigue. Propax is a daily multiple vitamin enhanced with our proprietary formula called NT Factor. Less fatigue equals more natural energy. Propax with NT Factor addresses cellular damage and gives you health from nature, energy from science. Call today at 1-800-982-9158. Try Propax with NT Factor. Call 1-800-982-9158. Order yours today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure, or prevent any disease. There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope that the discussion this evening certainly wasn't sort of over your head. If it was, don't be surprised. I mean, I'm a physician. I've worked with all of these things for a long period of time. But I certainly have thought it was a fascinating discussion. You may want very well to get a copy of this tape, and the tape I'll be interviewing Dr. Tennant again next week, and we'll get on into the actual treatments of this, and certainly we do have one of our listeners, a regular guest on our program, Deborah Tavares, who has actually had some treatment, and she swears by it. Well, anyway, we've got lots of exciting things coming up. We're going to be talking to Lindsay Williams next week, and he's down in Tijuana, Mexico. He'd had an illness there and had been treated for several months and really wasn't getting any better. I talked to him this afternoon, and Lindsay tells me he's feeling 100% better. And it'll be fascinating as we go into the background of his treatment. I think we'll be talking to him in the afternoon, and we'll get more into that as time goes by. But right now, this is the time when I need to remind all of our listeners that my ministry is primarily listener-supported, and if you are hope you would be in a position to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or certainly to subscribe to our newsletter. But if you're not, certainly we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we try to bring you the information that will help you begin to prepare to look after yourself and your own health, because I'm very much afraid that with the coming changes, dramatic changes in the structure of organized medicine, why certainly the elderly are not going to be able to get treatment, and people as old as I am will simply be written off. They call us useless eaters, and unfortunately, there is a total disregard today, even in America. For many of the elderly, we have the hospices where people simply go to die, and many times they call it comfort care. They simply take away food and water and give them a shot of narcotic, and that's the end of them very, very shortly. And you say that couldn't happen. Ladies and gentlemen, they kill 120,000 people in England every year, acknowledged, certainly, and you can look this up on the internet. The British medical system kills 120,000 senior citizens. I've talked to people in England. The elderly are afraid to go to the hospital because, of course, they are fearful they will not come out alive. This is, unfortunately, where we're headed. When a nation turns away from God, we talk about the quality of life but not the sanctity of life, because life is something that can only come from God. Well, under any circumstances, I want to mention a week from today will be the last time we will be offering a case of our books, Brotherhood of Darkness. What does that have to do with medical care? Well, basically, of course, if you read my book, you will understand what really drives the men who control America. I believe there's only a very, very small number of them, perhaps a few thousand at the most, and yet they direct everything in this country. The six major banks control 70% of the financial assets of this country, and as a result, of course, they are able to direct very well what goes on in this country. They elect presidents. In fact, if you go and see who the largest contributors to Barack Hussein Obama were, why, of course, it was the major banks in this country that control 70% of the financial assets. But they all belong to the Brotherhood of Darkness. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. But you will be able, until Friday of next week, to get a case of the books. And after that, we will draw the author. We're going to go ahead and do the printing. It'll probably be the last printing that I will do. I hope people will keep the book in print after I'm no longer here. But at least we're hoping that we'll have enough copies printed to last for a good long while. And if you'd like to get a case of books at a market of reduced cost, the number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I should mention we've had 5 orders, I think, in the last 2 days for a case of a Brotherhood of Darkness, $149.95, and we throw in either a free 4-CD set or a free DVD to cover the cost of shipping or help you cover the cost of shipping. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you're interested in getting a case of Brotherhood of Darkness. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because without revival, we're going to lose this country. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices,
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and well, hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg. And William, for many years, was the senior editor of the New American Magazine. He was the editor of the Republic Magazine for a time. And then, of course, he's a prolific writer. He's written a number of books. And certainly, he's also writes the Radio Liberty newsletter every month, because really, it was taking me too long to do that, and he does such a good job. In fact, if you haven't seen the latest newsletter, the February newsletter, it'll be going out very soon, but it is excellent, and it really gets to the very core of what America is all about. And that is a distrust of government. And Thomas Jefferson said, you could never trust people. You could never trust people with power. That is why we have chosen to bind them down from mischief with the chains of the Constitution. That's in essence what Thomas Jefferson said, because it was a realization that power corrupts absolutely, and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. So you can't trust people with power. You've got to limit that power. But of course, we've turned away from that. We're moving rapidly towards a dictatorship. Everything is in line now for that dictatorship. You can find the Department of Homeland Security has recently bought 7,700 assault rifles. What do they need assault rifles for? They bought submachine guns in addition. They bought over 1,600,000 rounds of soft point ammunition. They certainly have bought 2,700 armored personnel carriers. Why are they buying all of these things? Basically, they have coffins that will hold about 2 million people. If you don't know anything about that, just go up on YouTube, type in Jesse Ventura, pictures of coffins, or suddenly Alex Jones and pictures of coffins. And basically they have their underground shelters. Basically, of course, they are in the process right now of bring the drones into America. What do you need drones in America? They're not going to be tracing the terrorists. This whole war on terrorism is as phony as a $3 bill. This is for watching the American people. And where's the outcry from our political leaders? Where's the outcry from our religious leaders? Where's the outcry from our Republican leaders? It's muted in silence. Ladies and gentlemen, we are certainly going to lose America, because America is turned away from God, and God does bring punishment on nations that turn away from Him. And I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and His justice will not sleep forever. William Grigg, thanks very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, it's always a blessing to be with you. Thank you so much for having me on again this week.
So what are we going to be talking about tonight, William?
I think we have to talk about the drones.
All right, fine. Let's talk about the drones. But, you know, basically, they're just there to protect us from those wicked terrorists.
So we've been told. The interesting thing about the drone technology, of course, is that 11 years ago, not quite 11 years ago, almost 11 years ago, late part of 2002, if you recall, and I'm sure you recall, and probably some members of your audience will as well, one of the lines incessantly repeated in the war propaganda psalter on the part of the Bush administration was the idea that Saddam Hussein was going to dispatch a fleet of drones that would attack cities in the United States, that supposedly had this airborne armada of death-dealing robots that would dispense biowarfare and chemical warfare agents over American cities. And of course, he didn't have the technology, didn't have the means, didn't have the inclination to do so. But now we have a president of the United States that claims the right to use drone aircraft to kill American citizens by way of summary execution.
And basically, of course, people don't understand, why would the president be able to kill people without a trial? Well, they're combatants. Well, suddenly, could you tell me who the son of this man was, 16-year-old boy, it was a threat to? Well, go right ahead, William.
That's, of course, the real nub of the issue here is that the President of the United States does not have the legal authority, the constitutional permission, or the moral standing to order the execution of any human being for any reason. He's supposed to execute the laws that are enacted by Congress that are constitutionally suitable. He does not have, never has had, and never could have, the power of summary execution. Now, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, the fact that he does not have constitutional permission or legal authority to do so has not prevented presidents from ordering assassinations. That's something that has been done sub rosa for the last several decades. It's been an instrument of state policy in the United States, as it has been in other countries, for the chief executive to order deniable executions, to commend people, usually by way of some kind of an elliptical directive, to summary execution. What's happened now is that this is being openly endorsed and discussed by everybody but the president and the attorney general of the United States. They still speak in terms that give them some colorable pretense of deniability. But it's very, very clear that for the last several years, actually for at least 11 years, about the same time that we were being told that Saddam Hussein was going to be unleashing drones on the United States, that the President of the United States, whether it's George W. Bush or Barack Obama, has been ordering targeted assassinations using not only drones but also hit teams and any other technology that would be suitable. Cruise missiles work just as well. We've not seen many cruise missile attacks. They're a little bit more conspicuous than a drone, which has an aural signature akin to that of a large lawnmower. They're a lot more difficult to track, and usually they conduct their missions a lot more stealthily.
Well, I've heard, though, that some of these are certainly not much larger than a sparrow or maybe even a mosquito. I mean, they have the ability to micronize these, and basically they could fly those right into your bedroom.
Yeah, that's something that's being developed by our good friends at DARPA, who were involved in all of the dark operations and what used to be called the Skunk Works projects, the military-industrial complex. And that's the same group that's developed biowarfare and chemical warfare agents and has been working on genetic manipulation that would be used, if their wildest ambitions come to fruition, to create chimeras, that is to say, humans that would be genetically modified in ways that would make them more suitable for prolonged engagement on the battlefield, that kind of thing. DARPA has been developing a number of drone applications that are something literally out of the darker pages of science fiction. There is a novel, I'm not sure that you'd be acquainted with this novel. Some of your listeners might be acquainted.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we may simply talk about this program that they have over the drones in America, and because they assure us that they're not going to assassinate any Americans, certainly with drones, in the United States. Now, they've already killed several over there, at least three, over in Yemen and the Near East. One of them was an innocent boy looking for his father, and they killed him. They killed him. Where is the outcry? Well, his father was a combatant, but he was living with his father. This was a couple of weeks after they murdered his father. His father never had an indictment. He was never accused before a judge. There was no warrant for his arrest. There was no opportunity for him to be tried. They just killed him. Did he enter into combat? No, he was critical of the American government, and he said he was critical of the American government for what they were doing. Well, I'm critical of the American government as well. Would that mean that they could kill me here? Well, of course, there was a fascinating editorial in the Wall Street Journal criticizing Rand Paul for his filibuster and saying, you know, of course, how ridiculous it is to be concerned about the use of drones to kill people here in America. Why, the American government would never kill American citizens, you know, certainly without a trial or indictment. And that really isn't true. I've actually interviewed several government assassins. You can hear my interviews with them in my 4-CD set, Deadly Assassins. And two of them were government assassins. One is dead. The other's disappeared. I don't know whatever happened to him. And, of course, the other is an author who had actually tracked down the man who was paid by our government to kill General George Patton. So don't be too good a general, don't be too faithful to America, because they'll send somebody to kill you. This is a priceless 4-CD set you need to understand. And this goes back to the time of the Second World War. And if you don't think that we kill Americans, you are incredibly naive, ladies and gentlemen, because there is organized evil in Washington, D.C. And of course, you're not supposed to hear this sort of thing. But anyway, of course, we're talking about this current issue as far as, well, having the drones here in America. And of course, will they have the right to kill American citizens? And the Attorney General has said they will not have the right to kill American citizens unless they are considered to be combatants. Well, who considers them combatants? Yeah. What is a combatant? Would a combatant be somebody who is about to throw a grenade? Would it be a combatant be somebody who, like myself, is critical to the fact that a subversive group has taken over control of the government? Go right ahead, William.
That's a very important consideration here, which is weaponizing the will of the executive, irrespective of the technological means used to enforce that will. And as I've been saying just a second ago, DARPA is developing a number of applications of drones that would be very suitable for specifically targeted assassinations that wouldn't involve so-called collateral damage. And they would be, as you said, Dr. Stan, micro drones that would be the size of small birds or even insects. And it reminds me a little bit of something in the works of the science fiction author Frank Herbert in his book Dune, which is an allegory for Middle Eastern politics that's set on a desert planet called Arrakis that obviously is a stand-in for Mesopotamia, now what we'd call Iraq. But the secret police in this science fiction novel have use of a technology called a hunter-seeker, which targets on the genetic signature of a specific individual who's been the malign focus of the secret police agency, and it's an airborne drone that can hover and then dodge and dart around within the interior of a building or over a large space of countryside. And it's equipped with a very aggressive, fast-acting toxin. And the main character in the book, Paul Atreides, at one point is in his bedroom, and this hunter-seeker probe stealthily invades his living space. And he has to act very quickly to dispatch it because it will target and kill anybody who's in the room. And a maid is entering the bedroom and distracts the probe momentarily, and he's able to use the bedding, I think, to disable the drone and avoid being killed. But this was something that was speculative fiction in the early 1960s when Frank Herbert was writing that novel. We're at the point now where DARPA has probably taken this to the prototype stage. This application would involve not only, of course, the surveillance, which would be carried out by some of these micro drones, but you could actually have drones that would be used for specific targeted assassination missions. And what you have to recognize, what everybody has to recognize about what Eric Holder said in response to Rand Paul's filibuster, is that nothing in that document disclaims the claim, disputes the claim, or disposes of the claim that the president has the authority, as he sees it, to order the drone-conducted assassination, the targeted assassination, of a U.S. citizen on American soil who's considered a combatant. If they can contrive some way of describing somebody as a combatant, that person can be dispatched with extreme prejudice. According to the practices that have been used under the Bush administration and the Obama administration. And that's one of the problems with the way that the issue was framed this week during Rand Paul's otherwise quite remarkable filibuster, is that he was focusing on an excessively narrow question, which is the application of the drone program on U.S. soil against American citizens, rather than referring to the overarching and much more important principle that the president does not have any colorable claim to the authority to order summary executions of any human being anywhere on the face of the earth. That would apply, of course, to what's going on in Pakistan, where there are whole stretches of territory in the border region where people live under the perpetual fear and the well-founded fear rooted in experience of being dispatched at any time by these unassailable robot emissaries of a prohibitively stronger, distant foreign power.
And they've killed several hundred, I don't know how many civilians over there.
Nobody knows for certain, but several hundred, certainly.
Several hundred civilians over there, innocent civilians, and they've simply killed them and said, oh, shucks, it was just a mistake. Ladies and gentlemen, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. In Syria, we've killed over 70,000 civilians now. the forces there, the so-called terrorists, or call them what you will, Syrian Free Army, which were funding and financing and training, and suddenly were behind the murder of 70,000 innocent civilians in Syria. Where is the outcry from our religious leaders? Where is the outcry from our Republican leaders? Our Republican leaders are cheering it on because, of course, we want America to be the strongest country in the world. Ladies and gentlemen, why do we have to be the strongest country in the world? Our forces are supposed to be defending America, not remaking countries throughout the world, and that's what we're doing. American foreign policy has nothing to do with defending democracy or America. It has to do with crushing every world leader who will not go along with our agenda of creating a world government. That's what it's all about, and nobody's telling the American people that. I'm going to be quiet. William, go ahead.
Something that perplexes me too, Dr. Stan, is that people tend to identify the greatness of the United States as a country in terms of the ability of the government ruling us to destroy property and kill human beings. It measures the greatness of the country by the power wielded by the government rather than by the freedom that we enjoy and the quality of lives that we live according to sound moral principles. National greatness is not measured by the strength of a government. If that were the case, then one would assume the totalitarian countries having stronger governments than the one that was created by the U.S. Constitution would be better countries than ours. People who are able to project power in the name of the state would be the people you would identify as the good and great, rather than people who are innovators and people who are servants of others, people who do things for the poor and the helpless. Would be not considered anywhere near as commendable as those who deploy force that makes people into corpses. I don't understand why it is that Americans who are supposed to be the heirs and beneficiaries of this two millennia old Christian civilization would fall for the pagan allure of identifying what the strength of a government as opposed to the soundness of the society based on moral principles. I have this conversation often with my children when we're talking about some of the admittedly horrible things that the government ruling us does supposedly in our name, and they find themselves despairing as to whether America's ever done good in the world. And I say America's done immense good in the world. If you know where to look, and you have to look at those areas of human exertion that don't involve the use of state-sanctioned violence, America's been a tremendously creative country. It's been very innovative in terms of economic progress and social progress, in terms of propagation of sound ideas rooted in eternal principles. America's been a great blessing to the world. You can't say the same thing about the government ruling us, however, particularly in the last 40 or 50 years.
Well, I remember, I'm old enough to remember 50 years ago when certainly nobody went without medical care. Every county in the entire country had a county hospital. And there, if you didn't have any money, you got free medical care. If you could pay for part of it, you paid for part of it. And basically, you would pay according to what you actually had. And basically, nobody died of starvation. When older people, we had certain wards where we took care of them until they passed away. There would be a ward with 20 men in it or 30 men, and there would be two or three nurses there, and they would change the sheets, and they would get the patients up into wheelchairs. And certainly there weren't television sets in every room, but it was a good society, and nobody went without. But, of course, the whole idea now everything is controlled by the federal government, and now we're told there's not enough money to take care of the elderly. We're just going to have to start, well, we don't really deny the concept of death panels, but they're really there.
Yeah.
The federal bureaucracy is going to be able to limit access to medical care, and somebody in Washington, D.C. will decide what your doctor will do. Your doctor's not going to be able to take care of you. But this is the end result of when you turn away from belief in God and limited government and have a moral society to having an immoral society because America has turned away from God. And remember, of course, God is just and his justice is not going to sleep forever. America and those of you out in the audience, fortunately, guilty or not, you're going to have to bear the burden of the terrible things that are coming on America because I fear that God is going to bring his judgment in the not too distant future. We'll be right back. William, you go right ahead.
I really appreciate the fact that you brought up the cultivated disregard for the needs of the poor that unfortunately characterizes American society today as compared to what prevailed, say, a century ago or even within the last 40 or 50 years. And that, of course, is a subject of conversation I've had with a number of people, a self-defined progressive bent. They seem to think that private charity is useless at best and offensive at worst because they subscribe to the idea that somehow coercion exercised by the state sanctifies government welfare programs. And if you have private charity, which of course is an expression of the individual's moral conviction that he should help the less fortunate, that's not of equal moral stature because coercion is the missing ingredient that would make state-provided welfare superior to private charity. And when you have state-provided welfare, of course, what you're doing is you're engaging in theft and plunder and redistribution. What you're doing is you're saying that nobody really has the right to the product of his own labors and his own genius. And you're saying that there is no individual moral responsibility to look to the benefit of our neighbors, to carry out the mandate of the second great commandment that we love our neighbor as ourselves. You're not acting on the basis of love if you're using the state to steal from one person and give to a second. And furthermore, you're not doing something that's really going to provide material benefit to the recipient either, because this has to go through a process where everybody involved in the redistribution takes a piece of what is being redistributed, and you end up with a poorly diminished, poorly depleted end product. Whereas if this is done by way of private charity, there's no intermediary that's taking a percentage the way that happens with government. And everything the government does in terms of that type of coercive redistribution undermines private charity. And in spite of all that, Americans have been a charitable people for the most part. But what we're finding out now is that once the illusion of prosperity has been dispelled, we're nowhere near as materially comfortable as we assumed that we were on account of we were living in a state of deferred or immediate gratification and deferred responsibility. Our high time preference meant that we were living on borrowed and increasingly usuriously borrowed time, and of course those notes are now coming due. And one of the things that I think we need to recognize about our predicament here, and it's a deepening predicament in spite of the formidable efforts of the state-aligned media to convince people that there's an economic recovery underway, we are gathering momentum as we spiral ever downward, is that once the illusion of prosperity has been abraded away from the system, we're going to find out that the underpinnings of the system are not that different from what prevails in a country like Cuba or a country like China or a country like the Soviet Union, because we're talking about the consolidation of power in a central location vested in a ruling oligarchy embodied in a figurehead, in this case, of course, President Obama. And this individual acting on behalf of that oligarchy claims that he can kill anybody as long as they can contrive the legal excuse that that person is somehow a combatant. And they have done this, as you point out, Dr. Stan. This has been done to a 16-year-old child, and the justification given by a spokesliar for the Obama regime was that this child, the 16-year-old boy's father, was a political enemy of the state, and it was the father's fault because he was irresponsible. So in order
to... Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and wait a minute, somebody talking about the 16-year-old who is looking for his father over in Yemen, and they killed him, and the justification was, well, it was the father's fault. If the father hadn't been irresponsible, then they wouldn't have had to kill the son. How does that justify it? I mean, can President Obama kill anybody? He wants to, absolutely. And we've accepted that because there's been no outcry when he killed an innocent 16-year-old boy. And our religious leaders won't speak out, our political leaders won't speak out, and certainly most of the talk show hosts across America, so dedicated to truth and freedom, will not speak out on this issue. And if you're not willing to speak out on this issue, if you are frightened to speak out, then you become part of the problem. Go right ahead, William.
The thing about the Abdel al-Awlaki case, he was the 16-year-old killed at a backyard barbecue in Yemen when he'd gone over there to try to find his father. the thing about that case is that the apparent reason he was killed, he was specifically targeted. Let there be no ambiguity on this point. The Obama administration acknowledged after the fact that they had killed this young man. They misrepresented his age. They tried to say he was 18 or 20, and they said that he was a suspected militant. But the reason why they did this was because he shared a surname and DNA with somebody who was identified as an enemy of the state. That's the only reason they did it. What that means is that through a constitutionally impermissible consideration called the doctrine of corruption of blood, he was considered a combatant through heredity. So when Eric Holder, who is, as far as I can tell, the equivalent of the Nikolai Krylenko of the Obama regime, Nikolai Krylenko was the equivalent of the Attorney General under Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union, the People's Commissar for Justice, I think they called him. According to Mr. Holder, if you can be defined as a combatant, then yes, you are liable to be taken out by a drone attack, whether you're overseas or here in the United States. Your citizenship would give you no immunity. Your location would offer you no protection. If the government of the United States can define you as a combatant, you're fair game. And in carrying out these strikes overseas using drones, and often they're double-tap strikes where there's one missile attack, and then 15, 20, 30 minutes later, there's a second missile attack to take out the first responders and the rescue people. My Lord, these are acts of state terrorism. There's just no other way to describe it. But in carrying out these missile attacks overseas, the Obama administration is using a doctrine in which everybody in a strike zone, everybody in a kill zone, who is a military age male, that's age 14 and over, is considered a combatant. And as I wrote a couple of days ago in analyzing Holder's sophistical letter, as I pointed out, this is a variant of what's called the Texas sharpshooter fallacy. That's a fallacy of logic in which incidental clusters are taken as related to each other. Or to use a folksier illustration, there's a story of a trick shooter, a trick marksman in Texas, who would fire shots at a barn, at the wall of a barn, and then he would draw bullseyes around the places where the shots landed. What you're doing, of course, is you're taking a shot and drawing a bullseye around it. That's exactly what they've been doing with these drone strikes in Pakistan and Yemen and Afghanistan. They never take out non-combatants. According to the official doctrine, according to the party line, they don't kill non-combatants because everybody they kill by virtue of being killed is a combatant. And what they will do is they will find somebody after the fact to define somebody who's the victim of a drone strike as a combatant. As a matter of fact, Feinstein and Angus King and a couple of other senators, Angus King's independent, or at least that's what he describes himself as being. Feinstein, of course, is a communist who calls herself a Democrat. They want to put together a court that would operate like the FISA, or Foreign Intelligence Service Act court, that would ratify drone strikes after the fact. They would not be issuing warrants before the drone strikes take place, but after the drone strikes take place, they would investigate the strike and then issue a warrant after the fact. That's how the FISA court operates. Under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, there's a special court that will allow the FBI or some other intelligence agency to start using covert surveillance methods of somebody suspected of being an agent of a foreign intelligence service. And then after the surveillance has begun, the FISA court will issue a warrant. Well, in the case of a drone strike, of course, once the strike has taken place, the victim is dead. So the only purpose of the court would be to offer an ex post facto ratification of a decision taken by the president. That's what the Democrat caucus, or the Democrat faction, is saying in the Senate. The Republicans are saying that that would be an impermissible infringement on the power of the president. That's the state of the debate right now. Did they ratify it after the fact, or they just assume that the president has all-encompassing and sufficient authority to order this and can't be reviewed by any power under heaven?
And there's really no opposition. Unfortunately, the Republicans are going right along with this. They want an all-powerful government. They want, certainly, a powerful military that is to be the mightiest military in the world. And we need a military to defend America, not to push the globalist dream of a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and the destruction of Christianity. And even our own military is doing everything they can to destroy Christianity throughout the Middle East today. And
while the storm clouds gather far across the sea, never swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so fair. As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer.
William, you go right ahead.
One of the things that I need to say as well about what the Obama administration is doing here is that it's advancing the idea that we would use the military, would see the use of the military, to carry out these actions on U.S. territory. And this, unfortunately, has become the embedded consensus in the wake of Rand Paul's 13-hour filibuster, namely that there can be limited circumstances in which the military would be able to carry out drone attacks, preemptive drone attacks, against people who are identified as combatants. The problem here is that, of course, under the Third Amendment to the Constitution and the Posse Comitatus Act, the military has got no business carrying out domestic operations within the territory of the United States. That's simply not permissible. If you're talking about law enforcement or security operations, that has to be carried out by civilian agencies. If we were invaded by a hostile foreign power, that is to say an organized army under the command authority of a recognized sovereign government, then the military might conceivably have some role as it did in the War of 1812. And its role in the War of 1812 wasn't exactly stellar. I mean, they didn't exactly run up the score against the Brits. We have Napoleon Bonaparte to thank for the fact that, in spite of the fact that the Brits won the war, they decided not to press their claims against the United States government in 1814. But in any case, the national security structure of the constitutional republic created by the founders did not include the use of the military as a posse comitatus, that is to say, as a domestic law enforcement agency. And so we're seeing an advancement of the narrative in a very dangerous way, where it's just assumed that if you're dealing with a terrorist plot, that falls within the domain of the military, even if you're talking about a domestic situation. But there's another problem that buds off from that, and that is that most drones that are going to be operated in the United States in the foreseeable future are going to be under the control of nominally civilian police agencies, which for all intents and purposes now are local franchises of the unitary national homeland security state. And you're going to have police departments, which have been thoroughly militarized by the Pentagon, to the point now where every police department's basically just a support apparatus for the SWAT team.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William. Greg and Chris, I was just, before we went to the break, I commented how the American military was being used to destroy Christianity throughout the world, and certainly in both Afghanistan and in Iraq, while the military installed new governments, new constitutions, under Sharia law. Sharia law is radical Islamic law. It's basically the same sort of law that has been imposed now in Egypt, and so the people don't want it at all. They rig the elections. If you think they have honest elections in these countries, we're in charge. Our people are there, and certainly they rig elections there, just like they rig them here in the United States. So we've installed under Morsi the new government in Egypt under Sharia law. Certainly, the same thing is happening in both Libya and Tunisia. Why are we installing governments under Sharia law? Because, of course, that excludes Christianity. And if you are a Christian in those countries, you become a third-class citizen, and you can very well be executed. Christians are routinely executed and beheaded in Muslim nations. So, I mean, there's just basically a one-time Turkey was a Christian nation. Today, Turkey is 99.8% Muslim, less than 0.2% Christian in what was once a great Christian nation. And, of course, let's not get into the discussion on Turkey, but basically our military, our American military today is installing nations under Sharia law. We are in charge, and why are we bringing in Sharia law into these Muslim nations when the people don't want it, but it's being imposed upon them? Go right ahead.
One of the things you should mention in that connection, of course, is what happened in Iraq, which was ruled by a thoroughly despicable collectivist secular government but one that gave at least a little bit of breathing room to a rather sizable plurality of Christians whose roots go back to apostolic times. And now, as you pointed out, Dr. Stan, most of the Christian population of Iraq has been driven out of the country. A lot of them ended up in Syria. Some of them went to Jordan as well. Of course, Syria now is being torn apart. And you have in Syria a very similar government to the one that existed in Iraq, one that was a hereditary socialist dictatorship, but one that was not comprehensive. It wasn't totalitarian. There was a great deal of space for private action under Saddam. And under the Assad dynasty, there's been at least some buffer that has allowed a sizable Christian minority to live in some semblance of peace and security. That's not the case right now. In Iraq, about 6 or 7 years ago, I believe it was actually 2004, 2005, the previous constitution under Saddam Hussein, which of course was completely ignored by him, he once said, "Law consists of two lines above my signature." Sounds rather like the regime we're living under here in the United States today. In 2004, 2005, that secular constitution was discarded, and a Sharia-compliant constitution was imposed on the country, and this was taken as a credit to the Bush administration as a validation of its agenda to liberate that country, liberating that country by installing Sharia law at the point of American guns. And it is staggeringly perverse to know that you had probably hundreds of thousands of people killed in Iraq, among them thousands of American soldiers, on behalf of establishing Sharia law. And something similar happened in Afghanistan, which has been a tribe-based and somewhat vociferous civilization. They don't really have a sense of nationhood. They have a sense of tribal identity. It's sort of similar to Somalia in that respect, if not many others. In the 1960s, when it was somewhat in the Soviet orbit, but not really a fully realized socialist state, Afghanistan was a somewhat modern progressive society in the best sense of that expression. I don't mean progressive ideologically. I mean progressive as in they were making progress in economics and social relations. You had women who were dressing like European women and going to medical school and studying technology. You had a variety of social circumstances. They weren't dominated by the type of retrograde, thoroughly authoritarian, fundamentalist tribal Muslims that are the stereotypical image of what Afghanistan is like today. If you take a look at photographs from the late 1960s, Afghanistan looks a little like Lebanon in terms of its similarity to European modes of living. Well, what happened? What happened is that beginning in the 1970s, for reasons that are not fully transparent to us, the Brotherhood of Darkness, to use your very convenient and suitably descriptive term, decided to target Afghanistan, and you had the CIA start to round up as many of the most authoritarian and least modernistic elements within the tribal societies in the hinterlands of Afghanistan and mobilize them for the purpose of undermining the Soviet-aligned government and starting a civil war that has gone on now for decades. And so you have that country being completely ruined and then put under the reign of Mr. Karzai, who's essentially a crook. He's part of a very well-entrenched criminal network in that country. But they now have a national constitution. They didn't have a national constitution in the 1960s and 70s. The last power that imposed a national constitution on Afghanistan was the Soviet Union during their occupation of Afghanistan in the mid-1980s. And the difference is that they did a secular constitution, a Soviet socialist constitution, of course, a hideous document, just like everything else put out by that regime. But what happened with Afghanistan under the U.S. occupation, which is going to go on now for at least another 10 or 11 years, apparently, is that they created a framework of Sharia law. And, of course, that underscores your point you're making earlier, Dr. Stan, about the way that the United States military is actually doing more to propagate the rule of Islam at the point of the gun than any previous military force in history. I don't think that Sultan Mehmed Aga or any of the other supposedly legendary military warlords in the very rich history of Islamic militarism has done anywhere near as much as the U.S. military has to promote jihad.
But it's even more than that, William. It is anti-Christian.
Yeah.
Sharia law is anti-Christian. And what people have to understand is that certainly the average American soldier is just doing what he's told to do. Mm-hmm. He thinks he's defending America by carrying out his orders, whereas actually he is effectively working to destroy Christianity in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And certainly our special forces troops that are training the rebels in Syria are doing exactly the same thing, because I can assure you that when the smoke finally settles and the dust settles in Syria, why, they'll no longer have a secular constitution that'll be under Sharia law, and the Christians will once again be persecuted and slaughtered and killed. American military is pushing anti-Christianity, and God is not pleased, I'm certain. Go ahead.
Well, of course he isn't pleased, and one of the things that I find so tragic and worthy of remark is the fact that every week in this country, in the Southeast, the Mid-South, here in the Rocky Mountain West, you have congregations of Bible-focused evangelical Christians who are praying for the military and extolling the service of members of their congregations who are in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. There's still many American personnel, for the most part, contractors in Iraq and in Northern Africa and elsewhere, offering sincere and pious prayers and fond wishes on behalf of these people we're told are defending the United States, when actually what they're doing, of course, is undermining liberty and promoting, in many instances, militant Islam, albeit of a variety that's considered to be appropriate to the strategic geniuses in Washington, D.C. You have people, for instance, who are aiding the Islamist radicals who overthrew Gaddafi and then have taken over Libya and moved on to Mali. There are people who are hardline Islamist radicals, vaguely similar to al-Qaeda in many respects, and the same people, the same type of personalities are the salient element of the rebellion in Syria. As you point out, Dr. Stan, they're killing tens of thousands of people and chasing Christians out of the country when they're not outright slaughtering them. And there's really a reverse alembic at work. An alembic, of course, is a device that refines substance. And what we're seeing here is something that takes motivation that is refined and pure, which is patriotism, love of country, and a sense of mission, a sense of vocation on behalf of the weak. I believe those are genuinely the impulses that lead most people to enlist in the United States military, and that's how they see themselves. But this reverse alembic is taking these refined impulses and then perverting them into something that is coarse and vulgar. And that's the nature of this degenerate regime that you talk about, Dr. Stan, this secret government, this covert government that is taking control of the commanding heights in our culture and in our political system. And it's that element that now is claiming that the President of the United States, who is entirely their agent, thoroughly bought, paid for, and controlled, has the unqualified authority, and if not the divine right, the state-ordained right, to kill any U.S. citizen anywhere on the face of the planet he deems to be a combatant, according to what passes for wisdom in his case.
But, of course, the gentleman certainly they killed over in Yemen was not a combatant. He was critical of America, but he'd never taken up arms against America. He'd spoken out against American policy, but, of course, he had not been fighting and killing people and using weapons. So what, then, is a combatant?
In the case of Anwar al-Awlaki, what I find really interesting is that not only was he not a combatant in the conventional sense, but it's pretty clear that everything he did under, I believe it's, I'm trying to remember the name of the ruling, Supreme Court ruling in 1969 in Ohio. I want to say Matt versus Ohio, but that's not the correct one. There is a Supreme Court ruling in 1969 that dealt with seditious utterances by somebody who was a white supremacist Klansman. I believe he probably is connected to the neo-Nazis, which meant that people who surrounded him were almost certainly federal provocateurs and informants. But he said a number of things that, on the face of them, would appear to be incitements to sedition and incitements to violence against U.S. officials and an overt call, in many instances, for the overthrow of the United States government. What the Supreme Court said is that merely uttering seditious things is not a crime if you're not taking some kind of positive material action on behalf of an identifiable plot to commit violence on behalf of your aspirational speech. So if you assume that Anwar al-Awlaki was engaging in sedition when he said that Muslim citizens, citizens of Muslim countries who were invaded by the United States government have the right to use violence and lethal force to evict the invaders from their territory. If you consider that to be a seditious utterance, I do not, by the way, then in order to say that he was a combatant, you have to show that he was in some way materially aiding that effort, which he wasn't. If you say that he was engaging in sedition when he said that that Muslims have no more right to kill civilians than American policymakers and American military personnel have the right to kill Muslim civilians, and that if Americans kill Muslims, the Muslims have the right to kill Americans. That's another thing that he said in some of these transcripts that I've read. If you say that's seditious, you still have to prove that he did something materially to aid the commission of that act of lethal violence. And that means, of course, that you have to have two witnesses who are a confession in open court to a specific charge that would be construed as treason or sedition or criminal sedition or criminal conspiracy. In other words, because he's doing something that is considered a crime, you have to indict him, you have to arrest him and prosecute him and convict him by the use of evidence in an adversarial proceeding. You would have to have a court that would be duly constituted. It would have to be a civilian court because you're talking about civilian offenses, and you would have to convince a jury of his peers beyond a reasonable doubt that he had done these things.
But it's much easier just to have him killed.
Sure. And as I've read his biography, Dr. Stan, he was repeatedly interviewed, detained and interviewed by the FBI as long ago as the year 2000. On several occasions, they simply closed the case because they couldn't find any evidence that this guy was doing anything that would be considered a criminal conspiracy of any sort. They didn't like his associations. They didn't like the apparent fact that in spite of his claim to be a devout and pious Muslim, he would go to stripper joints and bars and otherwise indulge in conduct that's not considered halal under Muslim law. That's a fairly common thing that you see as well. They had a very detailed dossier on him. I mean, they knew when this guy was going to a strip joint, that kind of thing. And for all of that, if you look at the record, there's no evidence here that would stand up in court that this guy was a combatant of any kind, and yet he was summarily executed, and then his son was executed.
But you see,
that's the part that really sticks in my teeth.
But it's how you define the term combatant. And basically, when you define the terms and then you mete out justice, why, of course, who can contradict you when you are the president of the United States? And if you say, well, he is a combatant, you know, and maybe not by your definition, but by mine, I think it gives frightening power to a man. I do not believe I believe, of course, that one day Barack Hussein Obama is going to stand before a judge, whether it's in this world or in the next world, but he's going to have to answer for the murder of that man, and he's responsible for it.
And he's responsible for it because he arrogated that power to himself. This is not the exercise of licit power. We're, of course, responsible for those things that we do that are part of our legitimate stewardship. I mean, that's something that's made very clear in the parables of Jesus. If you're given the stewardship, then you have responsibility for the way that you've disposed of the authority that was lent to you. In this case, this isn't authority. This is an arrogation of power. And the very act of presuming to exercise that power, I think, is a form of blasphemy because he's elevating himself above God's law as every tyrant. And you have to use this term when you're applying it to somebody who takes power that isn't his by right. Every tyrant, including Barack Obama, is committing, I think, a form of blasphemy. The sort of thing that was talked about, I think, in the 14th chapter of Isaiah, where in referring to the king of Babylon, he used the image of Lucifer being cast out of the heavens. Every ruler, I believe, who exalts himself above God's law is a type of Lucifer's rebellion. And it's a very commonplace thing. It's, I think, something that has been perennial since the days in which Nimrod created the first terrestrial political government. Every one of them wants to be looked upon as the image of God bestriding the earth. And as you say, Dr. Stan, God's not amused by this. He's made that very clear.
Well, I think we're living in very, very difficult times, and I just hope and pray that the American people will begin to respond, begin to see what's going on. And I think there's a growing awareness out there. I think that Rand Paul certainly, if nothing else, certainly got a lot of people at least to sit up and listen. And certainly the definition that we will not kill Americans who are not on the, you know, unless they are combatants in America, we will not kill anybody who's innocent. Just a But we do reserve the right to kill combatants. Ladies and gentlemen, any one of you who says anything against the government could be construed as being a combatant. This is a frightening thing, but the fact that Rand Paul got the coverage he did, I'm rather encouraged by it. What do you think, William?
I think to that extent we've seen something that is encouraging. I think that in as much as people have started to talk about this and to say previously impermissible things about the evil of this policy, to that extent, if no further, I think it's a cause for qualified optimism.
And I hope that if you take the Wall Street Journal, you read their editorial talking about the fact that, why, after all, they would never execute anybody in America unless they were a combatant, but they never define what a combatant is. You notice that? We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead. We've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure and an honor to be with you, and I really do appreciate the opportunity. And on the subject of Rand Paul's filibuster, I'm not happy with the way that we've seen the dialectic play out, where we have, of course, this new manufactured consensus that in as much as you can be defined as a combatant, you're fair game for a drone strike. That, I think, is the material outcome of this past week. And I'm not at all pleased with that. That being said, I thought that it was very invigorating to see almost the entire cyberspace section of the blogosphere, if you will, that realm of cyberspace, that part of the blogosphere devoted to politics, fixated on that filibuster, particularly social media like Twitter. People were saying things and writing things and expressing themselves in ways that I think displayed a healthy outrage and an even healthier contempt for the type of people who have presumed to exercise that type of power over us. And so there is a resilient strain of healthy rebelliousness against usurped power in the American character. That, I think, is very good news. We're not talking about the people who rebel in the sense of simply defying the law, the moral law, the law against aggression, the golden rule. That's not the type of rebellion I'm talking about. I'm talking about the type of rebellion that demands of those who presume to act on our behalf that they obey the law. And that was, of course, the through line in most of what Rand Paul said during that nearly 13-hour filibuster. And that's something that resonated with the public. And that, I think, is something that is a source of great comfort this week. It's been a very difficult week in many respects for me and for many other people. But knowing that we're not alone, that there are literally tens of millions of people who, at some level, understand our concerns and share them, that's a source of comfort, strength, and inspiration.
Well, all we can do, of course, we are called upon to be on the front lines, to be talking, and hopefully the people are out there listening. I had spent last weekend at a conference in Los Angeles, and it was amazing to me the number of people who came up to my booth and just told me that they listened to our program. In fact, there was one very nice, very well-dressed young man who was actually from Japan. He was retired. Oh. He was an American, retired military. He's over there as a contractor who said something to do with the evacuation at Fukushima, but he told me that he worked in an office probably with 10 or 20 people in it. And what do they play on the loudspeaker? Why, Radio Liberty.
Oh, how wonderful.
And so people over there are actually listening, and Americans, certainly in Japan, other areas are listening. The fact that certainly it's not just you and I talking, but this conversation is going all over the world through the miracle of the Internet and the satellite. Why, it really is encouraging. Hang on for just one moment here. And before we let you go, William, I just would like you to get your tell your web page out so people would know how they can get your material, how they can get your articles, and, of course, how they can get to your PayPal button.
Dr. Stan, I do appreciate that. My chief outlet is still my blog, Pro Libertate, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or go to Google or another search engine, type in Pro Libertate and Grig, or just type in William N. Grigg, G-R-I-G-G. Pro Libertate should be the first return at the end of every essay. I try to update this once or twice a week. There is a PayPal button for those who have access to PayPal and the means to donate and interest in donating. They can use that PayPal button in order to provide donations. I really do appreciate all the help that we can get. This is my primary means of supporting my family and supporting what I do by way of conviction. And I'm very, very grateful to you, Dr. Stan, and to many members of your audience who have been tremendously generous with me and to my family. This is a real blessing to us.
Well, we hope this day will continue. I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I had to nag at William for weeks and months, really, to get him to put that PayPal button in, but I'm so glad he did, and he's getting a good response. God bless you. Thanks
God
very much.
You, Dr.
Good night. Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and there are a few people that we support, certainly Cheryl Hancock over there in Jerusalem. We're going to be supporting certainly the gentleman that's going to be doing the missionary work, of course, over in the South Pacific, we're going to be supporting. We do support William. We think he does a great job. He's got six children. And anyway, Chris, we appreciate the fact that he writes our monthly newsletter for us. So under any circumstance, if you're in a position to help him, please do. And of course, we hope that you'll continue supporting Radio Liberty. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or contribute, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. A week from tonight will be the last time we will offer cases of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. But the book really explains to you the spiritual forces that are motivating the people, who are motivating the people who run the world today. And if you have an opportunity to read the book, you can read the book. If you can't afford the book, you can go to our website and scroll down to videos, and then scroll down to videos. So the first item there is Brotherhood of Darkness. It's the two-hour talk I gave from which the book came. And then, of course, if you'd like to get a case of the books, why, they're $149.95 for 64 copies of the book. And then, of course, we'll throw in a free DVD or a 4-CD set to help you defray the cost of shipping to you. But we hope you'll get these and you'll get them out across America. We want people to understand what's going on, and hopefully the book will bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord, because this is what it's really all about. And if America does to have a revival, if we don't turn back to God as a nation, God is going to turn his back on this country, and I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice is not going to sleep much longer. It's not going to sleep forever, were the words that Thomas Jefferson used, and you'll see them engraved in the beautiful white marble on the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C., and never, never, never quoted in the general media. Well, certainly we do hope that many of you out there will want to join the Radio Liberty family. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. To really understand what's going on today, the master plan is called Agenda 21. You need to hear my talk on Agenda 21, the covert plan. My talk on the population control, the covert agenda. My talk on the hidden agenda, it will take you into water fluoridation, or just ask for water fluoridation, the hidden agenda. Vaccines, and this is called the specter haunting America. The specter haunting America. And they're poisoning our children, ladies and gentlemen. They're putting things in the vaccines that destroy their lives. 30 million Americans carry a cancer virus introduced through the vaccination program. That's how they got the AIDS epidemic started. You need to get the DVD, The Specter Haunting America. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection till Monday. May the Lord be with you.
I'll be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America. And that I love. stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountain to the prairie, to the ocean white with foam.
Radio show. You are joining in at the right time in the right place. You are at the Power Hour. That is where all intellectuals join to share common information, common sense, and inspiration. That's right. We are the Power Hour. We're a group of people who say not no, but heck no. We are for freedom. We're not the bad guys, and isn't it a shame we have to make that disclaimer? We are not the bad guys. We are good guys who care about our country. Many of us have served in the military. Many of us have been involved in professional businesses. Many of us have been hardworking people all our lives, never stolen, never done anything, and we're looking at a government who gets away with it every single day. We're saying enough is enough. And how we do that together collectively, I know a lot of you don't like that term, but how we do that together is what we're all about. And on Fridays, we like to have what's called Feel Good Friday. Unfortunately, Josh is not with us